What's up, New Numa fam? The time has finally come for me to step up my game on YouTube. So in January 2023, I will begin focusing most of my attention on building not one, but two YouTube channels. One will focus on just audio and the other on live videos. So do me a favor, take out your phone, go to your YouTube app, and subscribe to both channels now. Look for New Numa Godcast Live as well as New Numa Godcast Audio and subscribe right now because later is too late. Thanks, fam. Peace.
Hey, everyone. This is George A. Wood, and you are listening to New Numa Godcast with my man Norman, where he brings it raw and real. Check him out here. He's always got the next best conversation going on, but he has it raw and real for you here. Check him out.
Hey, New Numa family. This is Britt Eaton. You're listening to the New Numa Godcast. I love listening to my brother Norman, the Professor Brown, because he never shies away from topics most of the church won't even touch. If this is your first time listening, make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and on the YouTube channel today.
I listened to one of your podcasts on Bill Vanderbush. It was really good.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got a chance to listen. So I just want to officially welcome you to the show. Thank you for taking this time to be on here with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Good hanging out, even if it's just on the phone call.
Yeah, so I always kind of typically give a backstory of how I meet people and things like that before I actually get into the interview, just to kind of let people know, you know, how I'm getting connected with people.
Right.
Basically, when it came to you and I, it was like, I think my first time really that I came in contact with you, I think you had come to church at Baltimore. And then I think there was a point in time when Harold Eberle came into town and he was at your church. And then I came out there and then it was like, I've seen you some other places. We met up, you know, with Matt Stutzman a few times.
Remember that?
Over some meals and whatnot. Yes. Yeah. So there's been several times where you and I have been talking and interacting and things like that. And then a little over a year ago, you and I were texting and it was like you were talking about how you were dealing with COVID. And I was like, wow, you know, and in my mind, I was just thinking that, you know, I was praying for you and whatnot because, you know, I know how that is for different individuals. And I've been through it myself. I had COVID in June of 2020. Actually, it was from May, probably starting really in April until like June of 2020. And I was hospitalized for it and everything. So I know how that is. I know how that feels and whatnot. And I was just, you know, praying that you would make it through.
The doctor came in to my hospital bed and told my wife that he's not going to make it. You should make plans that he's not going to make it the next couple days. So the doctors had written me off, but the father had some different ideas about it. And it's a long story, but in my testimony, I've got a long testimony over the years. But anyway, I was.
Well, we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that because that's important. That's important to have in this conversation. But basically, after you and I had that conversation last year, 2021, I was like, yeah, I need to interview him. And, you know, I remember reaching out to you not too long after that, checking up on you and then telling you, hey, I want to interview you. And, you know, I do that with people a lot where, you know, I know that they have a story, a significant testimony to share and whatnot, and I want to have that on the podcast. So there are times when I'll just be, you know, I'll reach out to somebody because they came across my mind, and I know that when the Lord puts somebody on my mind, that that's someone that I should reach out to and I'll just, you know, let them know what my thoughts are on stuff, what my intentions are. And then after that point in time, I will, you know, I won't necessarily follow up on it right away, because sometimes I get caught up in things or whatever, and then I just forget. But,
right.
You know, I was reminded when I saw you this past a couple weeks ago or whatever, talk to him, get him, you know, interview him. And so then at that point, I was like, yeah, let me just do this while it's fresh on my mind. And, you know, this is not a coincidence that I'm coming across this path again like this. So let me get this done, get it out of the way. So I was really happy to see you. And so anyway, I wanted to tell people a little bit about you before we actually get into the interview. But I did want to ask you, because I noticed that in your bio you said that you said you retired but refired. Now, my question is, so if you retired, does that mean you're no longer the senior leader at Harvest Church in Hampstead?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
That's another part of the story.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that later. I know that you used to be the leader, the senior leader there, and now
right.
You have a network called ANGA, which is the Apostolic Network of Global Awakening that you're part of. And so, and then I see, yeah, exactly. And offline, I'm going to ask you something about that, just because I want to understand some things that I'm thinking about for myself. But
okay.
As far as your beginnings, because everybody who comes on to the podcast for the first time, you know, I get into their story from beginning to now, and right. And even like into the future. So tell me
this
about
podcast,
so where are you from? Well, I have a way of weaving in questions in a way where it won't be
all right.
As long. It'll be very, you know, we'll be able to get to things, everything that we need to really get to. But
right.
I want to know, like, from your beginning, where you started in life, you know, as a child, and how was your childhood growing up?
Right. I was raised on a 40-acre farm. My father was a huckster, which means he grew produce and sold it in Baltimore City. And I was raised, you know, country all the way. My dad was an alcoholic, which was challenging. And it was, he never abused me physically too much. I got a couple good beatings, but he was an old hard West Virginia, came out of the Depression, went through World War II. He had an eighth grade education and was a really hard man. And of course, I never remember my father telling me he loved me. I never remember him hugging me. And so, you know, that was part of life. You know, people my age, I mean, I'm almost 70 years old. So anyone that's in my age bracket, a baby boomer, understands being raised by a Depression era parents and the challenges that they faced. And then grew up in a rural county and, you know, went to high school and played sports and ended up getting into drugs and at the end of my high school years and started college, got busted. Meanwhile, I got my girlfriend pregnant and we got married at 19 and 20 and had my first son at 21. And, you know, from there on, we just kind of pressed into life, and eventually I met the Lord. And when I was about 25 years old, I'd already went through the court system and almost spent 5 years in the penitentiary. And miraculously, the judge put the anvil. He was ready to. He sentenced me to 5 years, and about halfway down, he stopped and said, "Mr. Johnson, I have no idea why I'm doing this. I'm gonna give you 5 years of probation and 6 weeks weekends in the Carroll County lockup," which, you know, my lawyer charged me another $3,000, he thought he did it. Now, look, and I was not a Christian at that point, but at that point, I thought, wow, God must have helped me out, you know. And shortly after that, a few months after that, that I had an encounter and had a born-again experience in my living room. I never didn't know anything about Jesus. I was pretty well. My parents really weren't Christians. I mean, they might have probably said, yeah, we're Christians, but you know, I went to church a couple times when I was a kid. My mother made me go to catechism because she thought that was what I was supposed to do in a local Lutheran church. And it was about all my, you know, quote unquote religious background, but I had this born again experience and was thrown on the floor and got born again. And, you know, I was an alcoholic and drug addict and got up and was completely clean and never had to go through detox and was completely drug-free, alcohol-free, cigarette-free. And that's where I started my Christian walk.
Wow, that's a lot. Glory. That's a lot. Let's unpack a few things real quick. So I know that you said a little bit about your family and whatnot growing up. Did you have any siblings, or were you the only child?
One brother.
Identical or fraternal?
Fraternal. Yep.
Okay. Wow. So, so when you were growing up, obviously, a lot of things were different back then when you were a child and whatnot. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of things that were in upheaval in the world and whatnot. Like, the background that your father was coming from, I know that West Virginia is known for several types of things that are not, they're not necessarily positive.
Right.
But, let me ask, like, what was it like as far as like your experience with, you know, the ethnic tension, you know, in your, either in your area, in your experience or whatever, like, were you exposed to that kind of stuff where you were living?
No, not really, because I was in a rural area. It was conservative. I didn't have an ethnic friend probably until I was in high school. But fortunately, I was never, my father was prejudiced, and he was an old school, redneck, white, you know, guy. But for some reason, it never touched my heart. I've always been, even before I knew the Lord, I've always been really graceful. And, of course, what happened with me is by the time I got into my teen years, I was in the hippie movement. And the hippie movement was, you know, a precursor for Christianity, even though, you know, of course, I was born again in the Jesus movement. But as a hippie, prior to being converted, you know, the hippies just said, hey, man, let's just all live together in peace. And you're cool and I'm cool. And so, you know, I had friends of all ethnicities, you know. And so I was fortunate.
So that was when you started to get your exposure to other ethnic groups then in the hippie movement.
Yeah, about it.
So yep, where was this actually happening?
Well, I was dealing drugs. That's how I got, you know, almost got 5 years in penitentiary. So I was a drug dealer. And so you'd have to go down, you know, to wherever you could buy it. And sometimes it'd be down in the city. Sometimes it'd be in a local city, a local town, you know, and you got to know the underworld. You know, I mean, I can remember guys coming in packing 357s and not only was I doing, you know, like, I was doing marijuana and coke and you know, some other drugs. I never shot up, but, you know, I was in the drug culture as well as in the hippie movement. And so I got to meet a lot of people. And, you know, our perspective was, hey, man, I'm cool, you're cool, you know, and ended up having some friends that were different.
So how in the world, coming from the background that you came from, What drew you to that kind of path, and how did you actually get into it? Like, you know, nobody just, you know, is walking down the street and says, "Oh yeah, I'm going to be a drug dealer tomorrow." So, Let me go start selling some drugs or whatever. So how did that come about? I mean, being that you were from a rural area and not even exposed to that, I would think at least, how in the world did that become a thought in your mind to be a drug dealer?
Well, I had a high school teacher that was a hippie, because you realize this is back in the late 60s. You know, I graduated in 1971, but, you know, I'm still in high school. And there was a hippie teacher, and we became friends. And he goes, "Hey, man, you want to catch a buzz?" And I said, "I don't know what that is." And he goes, "Well, you know, you want to hang out with me later on, you know, after school?" And I said, "Fine." You know, I mean, he was like 21 years old or something, just gotten out of college as a teacher. And I started getting high with him. And, you know, that's how it got started. And then, of course, once you start getting high, you know, then other people that are in that realm, you know, you meet them and, you know, birds of a feather fly together, right? So
yeah.
That's how I got involved then.
So,
and, you know. And from there, you know, just I really wasn't I was never, ever a mean, evil person. I mean, in my worst day, I was still just a good old boy, you know, enjoying life, getting high. And I just started selling drugs just to kind of support my own habit. Because at the same time, I'm married. You know, I'm married at 21 years old with a kid, you know. And so, but back then in the, you know, in that hippie movement, there might have been one state police to a whole county or maybe two. And, you know, kids would sit on the sidewalk, you know, and deal reefer and, you know, stuff like that. It was just, at that time, we were just good old country boys having a good time, drinking beer, getting high. You know, it wasn't like, oh, we're lawbreakers and we're evil people and, you know, they're going to lock us up. We never thought like that. We just thought like, hey, we're cool. We're hippies. We're peace and love, catch a buzz, you know. So it was a different culture in those days, not like it is now where it's, you know, it's considered more dark. In those days, it, you know, we never considered ourselves dark or doing something wrong. We were just having a good time, you know, doing some acid, doing some.
Yeah, I remember.
You know.
Yeah, so I remember hearing. What was that?
That to us, it was just normal, you know, normal hippie life. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, you'd be driving down the road. I had an old hippie van. And you get down the road, you see another long-haired hippie, and you pick him up and like, "Hey, dude, what's going on? Not too much, man. Hey, you want to catch a buzz?" "Sure." You know, we smoke a joint going down the road, drop him off, go on with life. You know, we never thought that we were doing anything. I mean, we knew it was illegal, but in our hearts, you know, it was a movement, and we were kind of like peace and love, and, you know. So it's interesting how mindsets and hearts change. Now, later, you know, later on, 3, 4, or 5 years later after that is when it kind of got a little more wicked, because that's when it became more of a drug culture for money, and then you had to deal with kind of underworldly people, and then it got, you know, a little bit scarier. And of course I ended up being kind of a local dealer, and ended up having one of my friends narc on me. He got caught, and state police ended up busting my door down one morning and arrested me, and they said I was the ringleader of the local county drug lords, which I really wasn't, but anyway, got busted, and that's kind of stopped my drug culture. But
wow.
I got busted.
At that time, and you were...
Go ahead.
So you were married at the time, so how does your wife respond to that?
Well, she was a hippie too. So, you know, we would get high together. And I guess by the time I got busted, that was early teens, early 20s. I was 24, 25 when I got busted. And I was actually I was working full time to take care of the family, but I was going to college full time too, putting my way through college. And I was in my junior year when I got busted. And I did graduate, but after I got busted and I was thrown in the lockup for like six weekends, I had to go in the lockup. And of course, I'm still getting high. So I'd go in totally stoned, drink a half pint of Jack Daniels and sleep it off until Sunday night. So after I got out of that 6 weekends, I kept getting high, believe it or not. And one night I was, one Sunday morning, I'd get up and I'd be smoking a bong. And back then, bluegrass was kind of a hippie music too. I'd get up on Sunday mornings and listen to this bluegrass station. It was called Stained Glass Bluegrass. I had no idea what that meant. And I'm sitting there getting high, and all of a sudden I start crying. Like, why am I crying? That's like this weeping would come over me. And all of a sudden there was like, oh, they're singing about this guy named Jesus. And it happened like 2 or 3 weeks in a row, and I'm going, huh. So my mother had given me a big old King James Bible when I graduated from high school to keep family dates and deaths and births and all that kind of stuff. That was kind of the thing to do. And I thought, huh, I think I'm going to be interested in reading the Bible. And got the King James out and all of the endows, and I couldn't understand the word. And some evangelist had come by 2 or 3 years before and given me a Good News Bible. So I had the King James Bible, I'd read it, and then the Good News. And I thought, well, you know, King James is the Holy Bible, so I want to make sure I'm reading what's holy. But I'd kind of read the Good News Bible to figure out what they were saying. And so I'm reading this Bible like late at night because I'm what my friends think I was getting religious, you know. I was just curious. And thank God the Holy Spirit had me start in John. In Matthew. And I read through the New Testament. And I'm serious. Like, this is really weird. Here I am, a hippie, my mindset. And I'm thinking, dang, Jesus is a hippie like me. He is so cool. He's anti-establishment. He's long-haired, freaky-looking. He hangs out with prostitutes and tax collectors. He always gets the last word with the establishment. It's like, Jesus, you're really cool, man. So, I mean, this is how I'm thinking. I'm sitting, you know, catching a buzz and reading the New Testament, you know, and all of a sudden I get through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and I got into Romans. And I'm reading Romans 7, and Paul's, you know, now that I know theologically, he's telling what had happened to him in his conversion. And he says, man, the things that I really want to do, I just can't do it. And the things that I don't want to do, I can't stop. And he goes, who's going to help me from this terrible thing? And I'm paraphrasing. And he said, thank God, Jesus Christ, therefore there's now no combination in him. And I said, man, I'm just like that. And I said, God, I want what Paul had, and bam, the Holy Spirit hits me. I fall on the floor, and I am born again, just like that. And that's when I started, and I've been on fire for Jesus ever since. I've never backslid. I've never gotten cold, maybe woozy, maybe, you know, like dark night of soul type of time. But, you know, never backslid, always been in love with Jesus. And that's been...
Well, I want to ask you something, because I want you to go deeper into something you brought up. You said that in your bio, it talks about how you had the glory of God came and filled the room that you were in or whatever, and you had this really awesome transformation. Can you go into detail about that experience, please? What happened?
Well, yeah, this is 20 years after I became a Christian. I mean, I went through the Jesus movement. I went through the charismatic movement. I went through the prophetic movement. I went through every movement you can imagine up to that point. And I had actually had an encounter by that time I was a worship leader. I was a preaching elder. I was in a big four square church and went to Toronto and had this huge encounter with the Father's love, which is another big story. But in the midst of that, it blew up my church, blew up my marriage. My wife was ready to separate me because there were the renewal people and the non-renewal people. She was the non-renewal, I was the renewal. And it put a division in between, you know, us in the church. So the church blew up. I went into a dark night of the soul, right? Because, you know, that time I'm a preaching elder. I'm around 40 years old. You know, I'm a worship leader. I was one of the top elders. I thought I was really something. And the church blew up, and I went into a dark night of the soul. It crushed me. and it was nasty. I don't know if you know if you've ever been through a church split, but it was nasty. And it was like the Civil War, you know, brothers turned against brother, you know. And I've always been a lover, you know. I've always been a lover. So my heart was broken. So got out of church, got out of ministry, and was in about 2 years in a dark night of the soul. And I would literally get up in the mornings and just weep. I was so broken. And meanwhile, I had kind of connected with a small group of leftover renewal people. I was going to, it wasn't even a Bible study. It was just some people that didn't know where else to go. And that was the only fellowship I had, but ministry was out of the picture. And one morning I get up and I'm weeping, and I said, Lord, my heart's so broken. I don't know what to do. And all of a sudden this big bright light. I mean, I can't even exaggerate it any more than what it was. You know what I'm saying? It was that incredible. And this bright light shines up in my living room. And of course I fall on my face. I'm terrified, and I hear the audible voice of God. And he said, I'm calling you back into ministry. You are to go to this particular church, meet a certain person. I want you to leave this small group that you're in. I want you to reconcile with your wife. And at that time, I had a small business. I said, I'm going to give you another secretary, which I hadn't know what that meant. And he said, listen to your wife's counsel, and I'm going to prosper you. I'm going to restore what the enemy's taken back from you 5 to 7-fold. And when I prosper you, and they begin to ask you, how are you doing this? You're not to tell them anything except it's the Lord. And so I literally ended up, you know, I don't know how long this lasted, but it was amazing. I went to this group and I said, you know, hey guys, God's called me to go somewhere else. I go to this church. They're not even charismatic. I meet this kid that was in the Four Square church that I blew up. I sat there for a year. The Lord says, I don't want you to talk. I want you to restore your family. So I brought my family back to church. And if you knew me, I've always been on fire for Jesus. I've always been in ministry. I've always been an evangelist. I've always helped on outreach and food ministries and preaching, teaching, leading worship, you name it. You know, that was my life, which I was a little overboard, to be honest with you. If I had to do it over again, I'd smack myself on the side of the head and say, son, stay home with your family. But long story short, I spent a year in this little tiny church and met this young man. And finally, you know, I'm going to say, Lord, you know, what's going on? Well, what had happened, my wife says, well, I'm back a little bit. I was in business with another guy, and his wife hated me because I was an on-fire Christian. So she turned against me and turned my business partner, not against me, but away from me. So I had to get out of business with him, and I'm broke. Of course, my marriage is not good, and I don't know what to do. My wife says, well, you like to talk to people, because I am a good salesman. I'm a good salesman. You should go in real estate. And I said, honey, that's like, you know, one jump up from a used car salesman. I don't want to do that. And she goes, well, so anyway, I remember what the Lord said. I said, okay. So I go get my real estate license, and I'm at this church, keeping my mouth shut. I meet this young man, and within a year, after I got my real estate license, put this way, the Lord told me, I want you to buy a brand new car. So I used every bit of equity in the house that I owned, bought a brand new car, and he says, I want you to dress up like your successful real estate agent. I don't want you to go you can't go to 7-Eleven on Saturday morning without being dressed up. In fact, I tried to do it one time and he rebuked me. I said, okay. So for 6 months after I got my real estate license, I had a brand new car. Man, it was beautiful. It was gorgeous. And dressed up in a suit. I don't have two nickels rubbed together. I'm in real estate. I couldn't even go to real estate school because I'm still like partially working part time in this business I had just to make grocery money. And all of a sudden, about 6 months happened, people going, man, we heard you're doing really good. You got a new car. You must be doing really good. And I said, well, yeah, the Lord is blessing me, you know. And all of a sudden, heaven opened up, and every contract, every person came into that real estate agent office, I was the listing agent, and within another year, another 12 months, I was the top agent in the county, making more money than I'd never made in my life. And then that's when this young man who I'd met says, well, I want to start a church. And so I ended up starting a church with him, and he was the senior leader because he had a Bible degree. But I don't have a Bible degree. And we started the church together in 2000. And I was making so much money, I just paid his salary. Like, well, I'll just pay your salary. We'll start the church. And from that, you know, all the things happened. My new secretary, I thought, you know, my wife's going to leave me, but the secretary, the real estate agent, put me under her wings. I said, I have no idea what to do with all these contracts and all these laws. You know, I can sell it, but I can't. She said, don't you worry about it. I'll do all your paperwork for you. And she ended up being an advocate for me. I'm doing all this business. I made all this money, started a church, did everything the Lord told me to do. And then all of a sudden people are going, we'd like you to come speak to our office because we've heard of your, like, to them it was miraculous. And it was like, how did you become the top agent? And they wanted me to tell, become and be an instructor for newer agents, which, you know, I'm still new in it anyway. And of course, you know, I got instruction from the Lord. Don't you tell them anything. And I would just say, it's the Lord. And they go, oh, we heard you're religious. We want you to tell us how you're doing it. I said, it's just the Lord. And they used to get so frustrated with me because they wanted to know what technique I was using. And of course, I'm not going to blow things because I like making money at this point. Like, I'm not going to be disobedient to the Lord. And then, and one of the things that the Lord told me when I'm in this bright light, he says, and when I prosper you, it's for my kingdom purposes. Remember that. And so what had happened about 3 years after I'd started the church, this is about maybe 4 years in the real estate career, the young man that I love him like a son, ended up getting himself in some trouble. Would not go into details because I don't want to say anything publicly. But anyway, he had to leave the ministry. And the Lord said, okay, now you understand why I've prospered you. Now you've got a decision. You can either take the church over or, and he goes, but I'm not going to make you do it. You can keep, you know, your business. And of course, you know, I was on fire for Jesus. I said, no way. The devil's trying to take this church out. I'm not going to let him. I went into my office and gave an agent a possible buy. I said, look, you can, if I'll give you my business. She was working for me as a buyer's agent. And she says, no, I don't want it. She says, you know, I'm not going to do anything to help you out. And so I said, fine. Went to the computer, hit delete, and flushed down a big six-figure income business. Just hit delete and walked out. And I went from making big six-figure money to, like, small, you know, three-digit numbers for a salary for a pastor. And from there, you know.
So I have a lot of questions I need to ask you at this point. So yeah. You said a lot in there. I want to go back a little bit. There was something that you said that was very poignant to me, and I think that this is important for specifically those that are in ministry and or thinking about being in ministry to listen to. You said something about staying home with family more instead of being so busy in ministry. Can you please go into detail about that?
Yeah. Well, see, I was taught wrong. Like now, you know, they call me Papa Doug, and it's a reason. Okay, I never had an earthly father. And when I was in Toronto, I had this encounter. Just to give you a little background before I answer the question, which I will. When I was in Toronto, and I had my wife go up with me, and I said, you know, we've got to do something or we're going to lose our marriage. John Arnett, who's a big guy up there that was the head of the Toronto Blessing, prayed for me, and I'm on the floor for about an hour with this golden, literally a tangible, physical river, something flowing over me for about an hour. And I had an encounter called the baptism of the Father's love. I'd never experienced it. And that's when I met the Father. And at that point, you know, I realized how I had really screwed up my kids, because the first 20 years of my ministry was you sign a long list of things you won't do. I won't smoke, won't drink, won't do this. I mean, I was in a Pentecostal church, and you had to have a flawless, you know, background. They knew my testimony, but, you know, like, to be an elder, you had to make, you know, you had to go to church, you had to tithe, you know. So at that point, I'm literally head of a food program. I'm an evangelist. I'm a full-time worship leader that carried the equipment back and forth, right? I taught how to, I had a Thursday night Bible study that had 40 people coming to, right? And I was belonged to the Full Gospel Businessmen, and on every once a month I would lead worship. So, I mean, I was in constant ministry all the time, because I was taught, here's what I was taught. If you serve the Lord with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, if you live your life like a poured out offering, He will take care of everything else. He'll take care of your family. He'll take care of your finances. And, you know, and I actually believed that. You know, I thought, okay, I'm serving the Lord. He'll take care of my family. Well, what had happened was, and of course, you know, now I understand that I'm an old man, but my kids were jealous of that, and they really rebelled against the Lord. And they really hated the church. My wife hated the church. They hated the church because I wasn't giving them the quality time. And when I had this encounter after the light, you got to realize I was out of ministry. They were finally getting settled down, like, okay, dad's at home. And of course, by this time, they're all like, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, my kids, you know, like they had already been through it. And they were almost ready to leave the house. And after this bright light situation, I got the whole family together, and I wept, man, I cried, and I said, I am so sorry that I put you through that. And it's like, I'm releasing you, and you don't have to go to church. You don't have to, like, you know, I was pretty strict, you know, and I said, I'm releasing you. And I apologized to all of them. I said, I am really sorry. And of course, here I am, the Lord saying, you know, start a church, and I had to make a deal with my wife. I said, honey, if you ever think that the church or ministry is more important than you, you just let me know, and I'll quit. Because I didn't really want to do it, to be honest with you. I mean, I did not want to go back into ministry. I was actually happy making a lot of money and not being in ministry, and, you know, it was kind of nice. So it wasn't like, yay, I get to go get back in ministry. But it was so powerful that, of course, you know, I had no choice. When the Lord commands it, you're going to be obedient. And so my advice to anybody that's in ministry, number one, if you've got children and a family, you shouldn't even be in full-time ministry, in my opinion. And if you are in full-time ministry, your whole family should be in ministry. Like, I have a couple spiritual sons now. And I've really helped them, like, through my pain and sorrow, I've really helped them. And they have their family in ministry with them, and that's part of their culture. But see, I was taught ministry and family, you separate. You don't want your family to be involved in ministry because they'll get crushed. So you keep them, you protect them by not letting them be involved in the late night problems and, you know, not getting involved. And of course, now I realize, like, it's either, if you're in ministry full time, then you really have to have a culture, a family culture that involves them in the intimate aspect of who you are, what you're doing for the Lord, and what's happening, so that they know that they are fully embraced by your love, and that, you know, that they're part of the ministry. Okay. My kids ended up, now they're, you know, in their 30s, 40s. I have a son that's 50 years old. They very rarely go to church. I mean, they're still Christians. They still love the Lord, but they've had such a hatred for the church that they really have never got back into. I have one son that has that stayed in church, and that's when he was local, and, you know, he went to church because I was the pastor, and he, you know, he was a musician, and he got to play and on the worship team, so he liked it for that part. So, yeah, long story short, oh my gosh. Family's got to be first. and ministry second. And I was, and maybe I was wrong. I mean, maybe what I thought I was being taught was what I lived my life out. You know, I don't want to blame, you know, the people that I grew up in, you know, and that were my superiors, but just had a wrong framework on how it's supposed to work. Family should always come first and ministry second. And if ministry is taking over your life where your family's not being taken care of, then as far as I'm concerned, you're out of the will of God, the perfect will of God anyway. And that's part of my goal now, is to help, help younger people minister, but get it right. Because, you know, number one, let me tell you, God doesn't need me a bit. He's a big God. You know, he can raise up stones to worship him. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we're not that important. We get privileged to serve him, but he doesn't need us. And he would rather us take care of our families and build a core intimacy of a kingdom life with our families, that we grow healthy children and healthy wives and spouses and family for the kingdom, than for us to sit there and preach the gospel 24 hours a day while they're being wounded. But I'm pretty passionate about that. I'm pretty passionate about that.
Yeah. I would say that I have recently come into that same type of mindset. And that when I say recently, I would say it was over the last few years that I came to the realization about certain things about my family that that made me have a similar disposition. And so, yeah, thank God that I do have that mindset now, because there's some things that, you know, I've been able to head off, but there are also some things that I'm still trying to work through as well with some of my kids. So, so one of the things that I was noticing, it seems like a lot of people back in your day when you were younger seemed to, if they had a situation where, let's say, somebody got pregnant or whatever, they would just get married. And, you know, there's a couple things that I was thinking about in that situation that I feel like people should hear, because a lot of times I hear people say something like God told them to marry somebody. And I have a problem with that, because there's nowhere in scripture, other than if you look at maybe Hosea and Gomer, and then if you could count the situation with Joseph and Mary, but that was, even with Joseph and Mary, it wasn't God telling him to be with Mary until after he was already with her, and then he was about to leave her because of the fact that she was pregnant.
Thanks for listening to the New Numa Godcast once again. This is your host, Norm. Follow me at Norm the Professor on IG. I'm in agreement for power and breakthrough in your life. Keep tuning in every week for that real talk, new life.